So what happened was this. The big deal, first introduced early in 1996 by academic press. So I keep saying the big deal, what was it? What it meant was that rather than picking and choosing from a publisher's offerings, so publishing, Elsevier had 1,100 journals, so a library might subscribe to 300 in print, and they would receive them, check them in and so on, write back for copies that didn't arrive and so on, and they would have them bound. But the publishers, or in actual fact the distributors, there was a word for it, it was kind of wholesalers, Edsco and Sweets and all those guys. They were sort of middle people, and they would send you the journals that you had subscribed to, and every year you'd get a list of subscriptions and so on. And all of this was quite time-consuming everyone, but it meant that, you know, you couldn't, unless you had a lot of money, you couldn't subscribe to the publisher's journals. So what the big deal meant was that rather than picking and choosing like that, you instead the library just bought access and got the lot.
Which sounds great.
Sounds great. Well, it is great. Yeah. Believe me, it was great, you know. You know, so where you'd had 300 journals, and you might have had to be saying to people, no, we can't subscribe to your journal, and you're just going to have to wait for come out and go through a library loan, email authors for reprints and things like that, all of those things. Suddenly, the library was able to. Now, what's not to like about that? The library paid more than it was paying for its print. Almost all cases. I know of one case where we didn't pay more. But the library paid more, but they got the whole lot.
Right. Was there any distinguish when you actually pay for a journal, whether it was electronic or print? Did you kind of get them together? So, like, if you bought a subscription, did you buy the subscription to print and electronic?
Well, you may have done. As I say, that would have been quite mixed, you know. But generally speaking, no. Most of that stage, the journals, some of them you may have been able to get electronic access, but the journals were still essential. But, you know, it's very difficult to generalise, but yes. I may have that. But... you know, I'm going on, but essentially what the big deal meant anyway is it was just all there electronic. Yeah.
So it's a sort of a change in business model.
Yeah. Now, with the classic big deals, there was still what you paid was based on what you had already been spent. So if you had been subscribing to 300 titles, then you paid more than, well, I'll give you one that I know. It's Stanford, because Stanford didn't go in for the big deal.
Right.
So I can give you their figures, because I won't give Massey's figures. partly because my memory of them is hazy, but the Stanford one, they were subscribing to 400 Elsevier titles, and it was costing $1 million.
Back then,
That's 2,500. So, right. You know, that's an average of 2,500. So you chuck in, you know, the 30,000 subs and so on. So a lot of those would have been $1,000 subs and so on. So they've got, bearing in mind though, that Stanford probably, you know, subscribed to a lot of very expensive journals, because they would have had money. Anyway, they were paying that much. If they had gone and they would have paid $1 million plus some, but instead of the 400 titles, they would have got the 1,100.
Right.
When these deals came out, it was even that. It had been amalgamations and us chucked and so on. This is Science Direct, which we still was Elsevier's big deal. If at any time, and those print subscriptions kind of carried on, so at any time they had cancelled, they would have managed to keep the electronic access to those 400 print subscriptions, but the rest they were lost. And then at a certain time, you know, you had the choice to cancel, and we cancelled, I think most people did. So you would have cancelled print for those four journals, but still kept the actual access to those 400 journals, but the other 700 fresh air cancelled. So that's kind of how the big deal worked. But at the time, because it gave people a much better resource, it wasn't, you know, there's no doubt about it, you know, on a per article basis, on a per journal basis, the prices were hugely. And people loved it, and particularly in smaller institutions. And smaller institutions loved it.
Because they would pay... what they were already paying, but they again, let's say they only had 200 titles, they would get the whole 1,100.
They would get the whole, that's right.
Yeah.
So you know, talk about disrupting. It disrupted some of the larger libraries too, because we forget that not only churches, but we know that academic institutions.
Yeah.
So that suddenly large University A, who've been sitting there going, ha ha, we have a magnificent of journals, and you know, we frown at your scruffy people coming in, sneak into our serials to look at them. Suddenly they found that, you know, that the field was equalised, and scruffy University B over the road, and sometimes they were over the road, suddenly had the same journal collection. Alarming.
Mm.
So, but, you know, not too many people playing. academic press. Academic eventually merged / got taken over by Elsevier. They're still a separate imprint, but they're now part of Elsevier.
And it happened pretty quickly, Bruce. Yeah. I think it was only 4 years after it began, so already the big part took over.
That's right. Mm. That's right. We come to that too. They had been really caught in this downward spiral, and they were worried about ways out of it. And what in fact happened there, and this is also interesting, they wanted to go out, but then they faced also this massive problem of user authentication. Because if Library A subscribed to 50 of their titles, Library B subscribed to 150, and Library C, but they were all different, you know, then they have to run this massive, and remember that the infrastructure didn't exist do this. They were going to have to be running this massive IT operation to make sure that people weren't getting what they shouldn't have got. So at some stage they went, gee, that looks difficult. And at the same time, the Higher Education Funding Council in the UK had money to what they call top slice, to support libraries in kind of ventures. So there was some money. So Academic came up, and it was a consortium. I haven't dealt much with consortium this, but almost all these deals are consortiums. So, you know, the New Zealand University Libraries have Onzel, but then also go in and so that's the Council of Australasian, is it?
University Library.
Yeah, I think you say Australasian when you don't want to put an NZ in an acronym. So it's the Council of Australasian University Libraries. Forgive me if I've got that wrong, but these were all consortial deals. So this was a consortial deal, and it allowed the libraries that signed up, you didn't have to sign it, allowed the libraries that signed up access to all of the academic press titles at quite a cheap price. So people went for it. There were multi-year, there were three-year licences. I think they were based on print spend. They gave academic press financial certainty going ahead. They were getting money coming in. It was more than they had been getting from the libraries. Some of their costs went down.
So what I'm hearing is more content available online, delivered speedily. Yep. Sounds great. I'm also sensing a bit of a but.
Yep, okay. There is a but, yes. One of the buts was that, you know, small libraries did better. But you know, as I said before, librarians are quite nice, so nobody kind of picked up too much of a song and dance about that. You know, big university might have huffed a bit that small university was getting a better deal than they were, but everyone still got a better deal. Also, there was a fair amount of secrecy around this as to what actually paying, and you know, so you didn't really know what another library's print subs had been unless they...
And that's still today as well.
Yeah, that's right, that's exactly right, and confidentiality around these things makes it quite murky. But the researchers loved it, and it really was an offer that you refuse.
Yeah.
I mean, if a person from University A and University B and got, but you've got that and that and that, they come back and they say, well, actually, our library didn't like it. You know, library committees, as I think I said last time, are staffed by academics, you know, so they're not going to win this at all. So researchers loved it. I said, no more having to wait for copies to arrive. Libraries used to have big serials desks queued up to be told somebody else has that volume, or it's at those issues of the binders. If you remember the days
indeed.
Of, you know, the exact one, at the time it kind of came out and everybody knew about it, and it was at the binders, all of those things. So by the early 2000s, most of the publishers had gone for these deals. You know, they came out, Blackwell's was an early one, Actress. Then, you know, Elsevier and everybody came in.
So they all followed suit with the same kind of big deal.
Same kind of thing, yes.
Yeah. Packages.
At least one of them. I won't name, but they're the same outfit journal I talked about last time. They came back with a deal which was less than University X, not a million miles from here, was already paying for their print subs. But, you know... But they still said, no, it's the way we're going to go. So
tell us about the catch.
The catch was the initial set of deals were for 3 to 5 years. That's 6-7% annual price increase bill. Now, that doesn't seem... That was probably less than had been going down before.
Right, but 6-7% on $1 million is still quite a lot.
It is. Yep. Well, 7% on over 5 years is 40%. So they were guaranteed a 40% increase in price. Their costs would go down, as people said, actually we don't need. I mean, we held a meeting here of academics saying, are you happy? Can we cancel that?
Right.
They looked nervous. And then, you know, he said, well, when did you last actually come to the library? Yeah, okay, go ahead and cancel. You know.
I think a lot of that happened.
A lot of that happened. So the costs would have gone. Secondly, no more cancellations. So that that level of sales was then built in, and the annual price increases were guaranteed to go rolling along. So 40%, and you know, over 10 years, 80%.
Yes.
You know, so library budgets didn't increase at that rate. The money, where did the money come from? It didn't come from increases in budgets. It came from spending a higher part of the budget on journals than on books. And also a higher percentage of the journal spend was then tied in, locked into the those publishers that had big deals. So smaller publishers, you know, if you went and did a round of saving money, which universities might go through, suddenly you had a very small list of journals to cut. Right? So then look for the expensive ones and cut them, you know, because you can.
So let's say you had like 80% of your journal subscriptions and big deals. You funded that through cutting your book budget. Yeah. And then you've got the independent publishers sort of fighting for the scraps of the last 20%.
And
this, a lot of the scholarly societies ended up being, you know, having to form relationships with the large publishers and the publishers and so on, and end up within, you know, within big deal publishers. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's one that was published out of this place, less is now Taylor and Francis, for example, and a lot of things. So, so that librarians really had less room in which to manoeuvre. But they couldn't back out of it, nor probably should they back out of it. It becomes a very sort of moral and tactical decision. So it took almost 10 years before this first series of attempts were made to back out. We won't go into those now because that takes us up to 2010. It's always worth noting that some significant institutions had a ways for participate. Stanford, I've already talked about, was one, which is why how much they were spending on Elsevier Journal, because they were quite open. Having said that, you see, they're a large institution, so while they may have said, oh, well, we only subscribe to 400, I thought, that doesn't sound like many titles, 400 out of it. Then you think, yeah, but they would have been all the ones they needed, you see, and the rest they could still go on to interlibrary loan or in other ways.
And don't forget, too, that at the same time as the deal started, they then started their HiWire
press. Yes, exactly. That's actually a really interesting
at the very
example.
Same time, so they could afford to back up.
HiWire, you're going to talk about in a minute. And HiWire is really very interesting in terms of scholarly societies, too. But anyway, we're just going to recap what we've gone over. So Big Deal played a major role introducing and accustoming research the notion of ubiquitous access to the journal. And this underlines a lot of the feeling about open access as well. It allowed the publishers to make a transition to electronic journals without significant decreases in the margins. It led to mergers and takeovers, greater concentration of ownership. The role of libraries and librarians selecting and cancelling journals really diminished. But librarians were winners out of this too. Satisfaction with libraries increased. Cancelling journals is not something that
doesn't go over well,
does it? Satisfaction, apart from among the accountants. Library budgets and spending continue to skew towards journals. But most academics were quite satisfied with what they were getting from the library. So there was no particular pressure to increase library budgets. So probably the losers out of this have been book publishers, academics and readers of books.
So that would possibly be more humanist if
I
were to talk about
it. Yeah. Okay, so that's the big deal. Now, there were alternatives to that. One was SPARC, which was the Scholarly Publishing and Academic Resources Coalition, which was founded in 1998. I was talking to Jenny about this book because this came from a statement made by the librarian of the University of Madison, Wisconsin, about you know, objections to the deal and wanting to take, you know, again for the libraries, and again it goes back to that original paper by King and Griffiths about libraries taking all of that themselves. So that's how we got the Bio-1, which was and even things like JSTOR and so on, kind of more user-friendly alternative. And the other one was HiWire Press, which you were going to talk about?
Yeah.
Tell us about HiWire Press.
Do you want to start us off, Catherine?
Yeah, well, HiWire Press, of course, founded at Stanford as an alternative model to the
Stanford Library.
Yes, Stanford Library.
Give them credit.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The library. In fact, the director of the library, the whole project.
This is a library-sponsored podcast.
And it was really focused on the STEM journals, science, technology, and medicine. And really what was in its favour was its ability to customise packets. The big deal wouldn't customise. And so it became known really as the open packet. So that depending on who was subscribing their suite of journals, they could in fact be a lot more flexible than the big deal part, very attractive. They did have some embargo to be up to 4 months for access could gain. But ultimately, the focus was on providing that PDF full text to the to the academic, which is exactly what the academic.
And a lot of it was based around scholarly societies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. See, the embargo tends to get a bit of a rough deal, you know, from open access people. Whereas it was a way in which those scholarly societies, with relatively low subscriptions compared with what we're talking about, could make an income, which they had to do, cost money to journal, whilst making their stuff available to the general public and institutions to borrow. 6 months is a long time for the person kind of at the cutting edge.
Yes, waiting.
But for students, general public, all of those people, you know, 6 months is, like a lot of what I read is old 6 months.
Yes. And of course, there were also many needles in the suite.
And, that's right.
There were about 1,000 that were openly available by the end of it, and 1,700 that were paid for.
I mean, Highwire eventually, you know, has been sold, but it was, you know, we still use Highwire. I know that in our own system to distribute journals, and it was a good alternative. And see, a lot of those scholarly society journals, as I say, gave them an alternative to being swallowed up by the publishers.
So Highwire were more sort of producing and hosting and archiving content.
Yes,
weren't
it was
they?
A platform.
It was a platform. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. They weren't publishing themselves.
That's right.
But they provided the software though, didn't they? They provided software, so they did provide some support for the societies to do this, and they've got a particular feel, you know, Highwire.
What else was interesting about Highwire is they actually provided a lot of different functionality that actually, indeed, when I was reading, I thought, oh my God, this is all just, I've taken this for granted. But these guys were actually kind of the innovators with this, weren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, when you talked about the toll-free linking, so making things openly available.
Did they do that?
Yes, they did. Allowed access to back issues. Important. They collaborated with, was it Journal Citation Reports? So all the stuff that we, the integration that we already think, it's quite. And then they also link. They provide linking to abstracts from the abstract to the full text. So your references, and you can link to the full text as well if it's a Highwire produced. So I found this one really interesting.
It's kind of the road not taken, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
And interestingly enough, you know, when you talk about mergers, and I talked about journals moving to large publishers, you know, often the scholarly publisher, the editors of scholarly journals, were just flabbergasted when they found out, you know, what they would be paid to move, you know, because they were, you know, they were, you know, kind of, hate to say it, guys in cardigans, you know, meeting guys in really classy suits, you know. A personal conversation I had with the editor of a journal who was terribly worried about, it was when that journal was moved into electronic publishing, he was terribly worried about doubling the price. He said, do you think libraries would be put off, you know, how many subscriptions would I lose if I doubled the price of my journal? You know, what's a kind of libraries? And I said, well, doubled it from what, $90 to $180? He said, a library's truly not going to notice that, you know. It's you could quadruple it and they wouldn't notice it. You know, those sums are simply, you know, the chump change, you know, in terms of journal subscriptions. Yeah.
So back to the benefits to libraries from the Highwire were they actually provided usage statistics as well, so that people could track and see how well certain journals were used. So again, if you're talking about it an open choose model, you know, you could say, hey, we don't, that journal's not used, we'll try and.
Lots
of benefits.
And then, I was going to say that, and they also looked at, they kind of encountered the whole difference between presentation between the PDF and HTML, and like you were saying before, academics aren't really, they want to see the kind of like the print version electronically. HTML was sort of kind of a new thing back then, but they kind of... Yeah.
And that takes us right back in the 1950s, you know, the academic journal was a high prestige product. You know, look at the glossy print and the beautiful for science journal. Those high quality illustrations are... Okay, so Well, one of the lots of feedback that we got last time is that we talked for too long, so I'm sure that we've managed to talk for too long again.
Yeah.
But that's all right. We've had a good time.
Yeah. No, it's been really good.
And next time we're going to finally, in our Open Access podcast series, we're going to get back and talk about, surprise, surprise, Open Access. So, yeah.
But this has been really good to lay the foundations and see how we've come to where we are now.
Yeah.
It's really valuable.
Yep.